J-Flux are family groups led by a dominant female. They include a mate and several female offspring that bring food to the primary female and her young. It's an example of cooperative breeding, when birds other than the parents help out to raise young. Magpie jays have an astonishing vocal system. Male magpie jays are the big talkers. Each one may use more than 60 vocalizations. Nearly 50 species of jays are found around the world, each distinctive, each with its own complex society. For BirdNut, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Today on Wings.
Realigning with the value of life, Indigenous perspectives. The difference is that nothing that was required for the sustaining of life was ever made a commodity.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. In April 2015, Angela Miles of the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education hosted an evening of 10 women speaking on themes of gift, matriarchy, mothering, and Indigenous worldviews. Here is Sherry Mitchell's talk, introduced by Angela Miles.
Sherry was born and raised in the Penobscot Indian Reservation. She speaks and teaches around the world on Indigenous worldview and spiritual change. Sherry is the author of Sacred Instructions, Indigenous Wisdom for Living Spirit-Based Change. She's the founding director of the Land Peace Foundation, an organization dedicated to the global protection of Indigenous land and water rights and the Indigenous way of life. Sherry is also the visionary behind Healing the Wounds of Turtle Island, a global healing ceremony that has brought people together from all corners of the world. And very, very, very centrally points out the spiritual and the economic here. These things are inseparable. They've been separated and torn apart in a lying way in our society. They have to come together, and I think the kind of work that Sherry does that in a really exemplary way.
Kwe, Andaliwisi, Wanahamugwasit, Najiopunawebskik, Pasilda, Ndildambayamakawasu, Snilpunawebskik, Nagakakagu, Sniltubayik, Nalita Haziu, and Dayan. My name is Wanahamugwasit. And the colonial name that I was given by requirement at birth was Sherry Mitchell, and I'm happy to be able to be here with you. I decided that I would talk about the things that are most important to me in regard to these issues that we're facing in regard to mothering and a new way of placing value in the world. Because I think that the problem with the market exchange is that we have placed all of our value on a market economy. We even define people who are single as being on the market. So even our most personal relationships are based in this kind of valuation system. And one of the problems is the fragmentation and commodification of ourselves. As women, we were the first commodity in this trade market. 3000 BCE, women were sold and traded for the purposes of marriage. And so our bodies became the first product. That led to slavery, that led to the valuation of individual property rights, the taking of the land. All of these other things kind of spiraled out of that initial commodification of the body of the woman. And so we see the suppression of women's rights being in direct correlation to the desecration of Mother Earth. And so when we think about who we are, where we come from, where we belong, all of those things have to be evaluated in our discussions about these things, because it's critically important for us to have an understanding of where we've come from, how we got there, and where we need to go from here going forward, because mistakes are repeated when we're not aware of how they were created. And so I want to just tell you some stories. I want to tell you about one of our creation stories. In our tradition, I can only speak for my own tradition, which is a unique perspective. And it is not an indigenous perspective per se, in the way that there's a pan-indigenous worldview, though there are similarities. We all have distinct cultural beliefs. We all have distinct traditions. We all have distinct ways of being in relation to life, but there are core similarities that can be found across the globe in indigenous cultures. And I also, at some point, want to address the question about pride that this young woman over here, and I can say she's a young woman because I'm older than she is, about having pride in who we are as indigenous people. For me, like, who am I as a Skidjinawe Apid, an Elbunwapskik? Who am I as a daughter of the Penobscot Nation? And so in our creation stories, there are two figures that make up the creator. The creator is not a single individual. And we look at the world from a balanced point of view. So we have Kachiniwesk and Ekjemundo. Kachiniwesk is the sacred feminine. Ekjemundo is the sacred masculine. And in this story, Ekjemundo is the void of all possibility. It's that collection of matter that's waiting for animation. And so Ekjemundo sits stable, waiting for the voice of Kachiniwesk to speak into him. And it is the voice of the sacred feminine speaking into that pool of matter that provides us with all possibilities, creating ripples, vibrations that create form. And then that form is animated and moves out into the world. And that's the dance between the sacred masculine and the sacred feminine. And so in our stories, when we talk about our creation and how that connects to our web of life, we don't have, 3 months to sit here together and talk about all of the stories. But what I can tell you is that seed of life created through the dance of Kachiniwesk and Ekjemundo, when it was put into motion and that seed expanded, creating all life across our universe, that creates what we know as the web of life. And this web of life concept is not theoretical. It's not mythological. It's scientific. We all come from this great seed of life that exploded and expanded across the known universe. And so our teachings about web of life, what we call Pasilda and Dilnabamuk, looking at all things as our relatives, is based on this understanding of the creation of the universe, where we were all part of one seed of life. We're all comprised of this one collective of matter that is spread across the universe. In 1992 in Geneva, scientists, there should be an X on the floor. I'm always on the edge. So in 1992 in Geneva, scientists did an experiment called the twin photon experiment. And in that experiment, they wanted to see the relationship between two photons that were once connected that are then separated, to see if there's a correlation between the two. So one was stimulated in one way to see if the other would respond. And they found out that it did. And then they wanted to see if there was a time lapse between the stimulation of one and the response in the other. And they found out that there was no time lapse, that it was instantaneous, that when one was stimulated, the other instantaneously responded. And so what they devised from this was the term quantum entanglement, right? And so this quantum physics term of quantum entanglement is tied to the indigenous understanding of the web of life, that we are not just connected in theoretical ways. It's not just when I have too much, you have too little. There's a real spiritual and energetic connection that takes place. And so a way to understand that is to think about phantom limb theory. Somebody has their leg amputated and they still get sensations in their foot. Their leg still itches. They can feel it. This is another scientific understanding of Web of Life teachings from the indigenous perspective. And so that understanding is based in these concepts of quantum entanglement that says that any matter that is once connected physically can never be disconnected energetically. For us, we take that a step further and say energetically and spiritually. So because we came from this one seed of life, we can never be disconnected energetically or spiritually from one another. And so when we see this mother whale carrying her baby around for 17 days, trying to communicate to us what we're doing to life, that's a message for us about quantum entanglement. When we look around the world and we recognize that anxiety and depression is impacting the majority of the population, that's a message to us about our connectivity. The problem is that we have lost sight of the depth of our connectivity. The problem is that we don't understand that these Web of Life teachings are trying to explain to us these concepts of quantum entanglement. So when we're feeling extreme anxiety in our bodies and we can't identify the source, when we're feeling triggered by trauma, by depression, and there's no easy way for us to explain it, right? For some of us, we can easily connect our experience to our lived trauma. But what about those who had a childhood that was full of noodle salads and happy birthdays? What about those people who can't explain their trauma and connect it to their lived experience, but they're feeling it in their bodies anyway? A society tells them there's something wrong with you. You're flawed. You're broken. The truth is that something is right with them. Because what they're feeling in their bodies is the pain of that mother whale. What they're feeling in their bodies that they can't identify is the pain of the mother whose child washed up on the shore dead. That was all over the news from Syria. What they're feeling in their bodies is the immense loneliness of the last of a species who's about to go extinct. What they're feeling in their bodies is the deep grief of our tree families as their relatives are being cut down. And it's this disconnection that we have with life that causes us to respond in these frantic ways to try to fill the emptiness that we're feeling with more stuff, rather than reconnecting ourselves to life. So what I was taught was that we as women are the creators of life, that we have a sacred responsibility that was gifted to us to bring life into this world from the other side, that our bodies actually contain a portal that connects this world with the other worlds, that we call forth that life, we bring it into our bodies, and we cultivate it in the waters of life below the space where our heartbeat can be heard. And in that heart-based space, we care for and we nourish the life that we've been given. That's our first ecosystem, is our mother's womb. Then we are born a second time into this world, and that umbilical connection that has sustained us through our gestation is transferred to the Earth Mother, and the Earth Mother sustains us for the remainder of our lives. And when we lose that connection to the Earth Mother, we lose our way. And so now we're dealing with millennia of that connection being purposely severed. We're dealing with millennia of the heart-based wisdom of the sacred feminine being denied. We're dealing with the implications of millennia of masculine action out into the world not being informed by the sacred voice of Kachiniwesk, who is the keeper of life. And as a result, we're creating a reality that is void of life. So we think about the things that we value in the society, and we value our role as consumers. We value youth. We value beauty, which means that we're not looking to our elders anymore, right? We're not looking to our elders for answers. We're not valuing the wisdom and the gift of old age. We're not valuing ourselves as intact human beings outside of a market valuation system. We're commodifying all aspects of who we are. And so we're seeing the evidence of that playing out on a global stage right now. And so what we call this time right now is the time of Giwalk. Giwalk is the cannibal giant. And Giwalk is the protector of the sacred feminine. Giwalk is the protector of Mother Earth. And so the story says that Giwalk lies asleep in the forest for ages and only awakens when he hears a specific cry of the Earth Mother that tells him that human beings are consuming faster than she can produce and harming her faster than she can heal. And when Giwalk awakens, he dances the people into this frenzied illusion of mass consumption until the species dances themselves off the planet so that the Earth Mother can renew herself. And in our stories, we're told that this is the fourth time we've been here, and we haven't figured it out yet. And so now we're here with another chance to change our course. But the only way for us to put Giwalk back to sleep is for us to wake up. And to realize that the lie that we have been fed, the original sin, in my opinion, this illusion of separation, is going to lead us to our extinction. We have to start recognizing that this belief in othering, not only within our species, the ways that we other ourselves and the ways that we separate ourselves, but also this othering from the natural world. So one of our other creation stories tells us that we were born, or we entered this world when Gluskabe, the man from nothing, that void of potential, shot an arrow into the ash tree and split it open, and we came from its roots. We emerged from within its roots. And that doesn't tell us that the ash tree is our mother. That tells us that the ash tree is our kin, that we're made up of the same foundational elements as that ash tree. And today we still weave our baskets from the ash tree to remind us that we are woven together with all of the elements of life, and that the container that holds our life is the very elements of creation that we're tied to. And so when we forget those stories, when we forget the truth of what we know deep in our core about our relationship to life, we begin acting in a way that creates an imbalance that leads to the destruction of life. And so I wanted to talk about the realigning of life because we're talking about creating this new way of being in the world that to us is ancient. We call it Skijinawe Bamalsawagin. It's a way of being in relation with life that is harmoniously balanced. It's not an inherent right. It's a balancing of our rights with responsibilities. So the Earth Mother, our what we call our first Lugudawagin, right? You can call it a treaty or a contract or an agreement. This Lugudawagin is entering into a kinship relationship. And our first Lugudawagin was with Mother Earth when we came here. First with the Creator that we would come here, then with Mother Earth when we came here. And what we agreed to was to stand in protection of all life so that we would have the right to be able to freely accept the gifts that Mother Earth gave us to sustain our lives. So we believe in a balancing, right? I also come from a trade culture. You know, we traded goods. The difference is that nothing that was required for the sustaining of life was ever made a commodity. Our bodies are not commodities. Mother Earth is not a commodity. Our food, our water, our air, none of those things are commodities that you can't commodify and you can't sell and you can't create any type of legitimate balanced trade where life is at stake. And so when we're talking about a mothering economy, when we're talking about a gifting economy, we're talking about being able to sustain the very elements of life. That means changing our entire valuation system from one that's based on profitability to one that's has life at the very top. The sacredness of life, the value of life. And so I wanted to share those stories with you just to ground our time together in a bit of history that science is now beginning to understand as being more than mythology, that there's deep wisdom in our ways of being. And we understand that our oral traditions are based on Kachiniwesk speaking into Ekchimundo and creating form. We understand that frequency and vibration create form, and that that form eventually creates the reality that we're living in. There's deep scientific truth in that. It's not a mythology. And so all of these things that we're talking about are rooted in deep truth. It's not some harebrained idea that somebody just came up with. It's a balanced way of being that is aligned with life. And so there's this incredible beauty in it. And I also want to speak to you. And one of the things that we found in our community is that the pride that you're talking about is found in what we call our mother tongue. Because our language contains all of the instructive and relational elements that guide our lives. Our languages have been existing in relationship with the places where we're from for tens of thousands of years. And so as we've begun to reclaim our languages and decolonize our languages from the flat, efficient manner that they've been pared down to restore and breathe the life back into our languages, that as we're teaching our children those languages, they're learning to understand the depth of knowledge that we possess as Indigenous peoples. One of my friends tells a story about being a student, and most of the students from her community only spoke in their language, and the teachers shamed them because of the language barrier that existed between them and their English-speaking teachers. And that there was all of this feeling of inadequacy that was created in them. And when she was 19 years old, she went to her first ceremony. And when she went to that first ceremony and started to learn from those elders, she realized that everything that she really needed to know was contained within that language. She realized that her people had a complex understanding of deep science and mathematics, geology, astronomy, that there was all of this incredible depth of knowledge that she had been forcibly separated from through the intrusion of colonial education, and that reclaiming that indigenous education through the mother tongue, there's a reason why it's called the mother tongue, because it connects us in relationship to the places where we're from, that created within our young people the pride in knowing who they are and where they come from. The pride in understanding what they carry, because one of the dangers is this kind of new age notion in oneness. Because we believe that oneness equals sameness, and that couldn't be further from the truth. Because when we homogenize ourselves, we strip away our core values, and then we forget how to live in relationship to life. So when we start thinking about the fact that our ecosystems with Mother Earth, our relationship to those, give us all the information that we need in order to live healthy, whole lives, we start understanding that our human family also needs to have that same diversity. My friends in Maori territory have Maori school, right? I have friends who have Greek school. Reminding of those core values and insistence upon knowing those core values. We have immersion schools in our territory. We're going to be creating a Wabanaki school, which is an after-school program that teaches all of these things to our children. Right? There's all of these different cultural teachings that are taught in an extracurricular form of environment where the parents are taking responsibility for ensuring that the core values remain intact. And I think that's how we create pride, is by really making a point of ensuring that the core values of where you come from, the core values of your people, are instilled within the hearts of your children. And we do that by demonstrating that pride ourselves. Right? We have to show them how to get there by showing them that we're on that path as well. You know, it's not just something that somebody else can give them. It has to rise up from within them, and we give that to them. So I think I'm just going to say that much for now. There's a lot more I could share with you, but there's a lot of other people that want to speak, and I want to honor their time. So I just will say to you, Kachi Williwan, thank you so much for having me, and Pasilda and Dilnabamuk, you know, I offer these words for all my relations. And there's one more thing that I wanted to say that I should have said at the beginning, and I ask that the ancestors of this land forgive me, but I want to recognize that we're standing on the original land of the indigenous peoples of this place. And so one of my favorite quotes is from a Crow elder named Shis Crow that says, "The soil you see beneath your feet is not ordinary soil. It is the dust of the bones, the flesh, and the blood of my ancestors. The soil as it is my dead and my blood." And that's another thing that we need to remember, is that the ancestors of those who have lived in relationship with that land have more than a territorial relationship. They have a blood relationship with that place. And so I just want to honor the original peoples of this place, Mississaugas, Haudenosaunee, Ojibwe, Wendat, Cree. There's a whole lot of indigenous peoples that came from this territory. And so I want to recognize and I want to honor them. And I ask you to do the same. Thank you.
Sherry Mitchell, author of the book Sacred Instructions, Indigenous Wisdom for Living Spirit-Based Change. She is also a lawyer. Find more on Wikipedia. Her first name ends in an I. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Thank you to your local community radio stations, to Suzette Cullen, and to Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, the maternal roots of the gift economy. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wing Series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.